Okay, well, tonight we'll begin what is really the last lesson in our series on God. I don't there's more material than we can cover in this lesson in 1 week. And so next week we'll conclude this lesson, and that will be the end of our study of God. We've really only touched the hem of the garment. There's so much more we could say, so much more we could think about, but I think we have established some things about God that we may not have thought about before. Tonight we'll end by talking about the fear of God. And I read this statement that is made by the author of our study. He's quoting John Murray and his book, Principles of Conduct. He says, "If we know God, we must know him in the matchless glory of his transcendent majesty. And the only appropriate posture for us is prostration, I can say that word, before him in awe and reverence. To think otherwise is to deny the transcendent greatness of God, and that is infidelity. The pervasive emphasis of scriptures upon the fear of God as the determinative attitude of heart in both religion and ethics, and as the characteristic link of God's people, mark of God's people, excuse me, is exactly what must have been if the Bible is consistent with itself. The doctrine of God could know nothing else. Our consciousness is not biblical unless it is conditioned by our fear of God." And I was reflecting on why we're afraid. What do you think fear of something arises from? Do you ever fear your parents?
Yes.
Yeah. When I was working as a school psychologist, I dealt with a lot of kids who came from messed up family backgrounds. And a lot of the kids that I dealt with came from alcoholic homes where one of their parents, or maybe both, were alcoholics. And as they described their home life, it was something that I couldn't imagine. It was chaos. When you came through the front door, you had no idea what was going to greet you. It didn't depend on what you had done. It didn't depend on anything other than what your parent had been drinking. And so I talked to kids who came through the door, and whenever they came through the door, they held their backpack up in front of their face because about half the time, a beer bottle came flying through the air at them for opening the door. That's the kind of atmosphere that generates tremendous fear, chaos, when what's going to happen is just absolutely chaotic. And I must tell you, I am so fortunate that I have a hard time understanding what it's like to grow up in that kind of a household. And I've said to myself a lot of times, there but for the grace of God, go I. If I grew up in that kind of a household with that kind of fear, there's no telling where I'd be. I could always count on something when I came home. It was going to be the same every time I came home. Now, if I had done something that I knew I wasn't supposed to do, I approached that situation with a certain amount of fear because I knew that there were going to be consequences for what I had done. But I never had to deal with chaos. And when the Apostle Paul wrote Romans 13, he makes a statement that I think encapsulates all of this. In Romans 13, he's talking about the relationship that we have with civil government. And he says, do you want to not be afraid of the rulers? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the saint. But if you do what is evil, remember, they bear not the sword in vain. So he talks about not being afraid of civil government. And I think about that when, you know, I drive down the road and I look in the rearview mirror and I see blue, blue, blue. There was a time when I was driving down the road that if I saw the flashing blue lights in my back window, I just pulled over because I knew that I had done something that was worthy of them pulling up behind me. Now, I drive down the road, I see the blue, 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 and I pull over so they can go past me because I know that they're looking for a bad guy. And I hope that they find him. I'm not afraid when I see blue, blue, blue in the back window. Now, when I drove like a madman and I, you know, tried to pin the speedometer over on the right-hand side, every time I saw blue, 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 I was afraid because I knew they were going to pull me over. Okay? So I think there's a lesson there to be learned about our relationship with God. Now, Paul talked about it in terms of the relationship that we have with civil government, but the relationship that we have with God is pretty much the same kind of relationship. So I want to talk a little bit about fear tonight, but let me give you a chance to respond to what he's saying here, what Murray has said in his book. Any thoughts? Go ahead, Carol.
Can't matter, I had a thingy. Oh, go ahead. Well, that's okay. I like that because I think that at least I tend to, because I want to have an intimate relationship with God, and I think he's invited me to have that relationship, sometimes I think I lose sight of his majesty and that divine, that reverence for the divine that I should have, that respect and awe. And, you know, you talk about the children who grow up in such a chaotic environment. They have a fear for themselves because of uncertainty. That's a different kind of fear, I think. I think the fear that we have, that God expects for us to have for him, the fear of the Lord, is recognizing his majesty and recognizing how great he is, and prostrate and subject ourselves to that, and to honor and reverence and awe that those children don't have respect, that kind of reverence and awe and respect for their parents. The reason you had a fear when you had some gifts is because you had a reverence and a respect, a healthy respect for your parents and the laws that they set out for you. So fear isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think that the fear of God and being afraid are two different things, although I do think that we should fear the consequences should we not fear God. You know what I mean? If we don't subject ourselves in reverence and awe, and we don't conduct ourselves in a relationship with Him. It's really difficult for me sometimes to grapple with that because He's invited me to have that intimate relationship with Him. I mean, we're said we should be able to call Him Abba Father. That means, you know, what I picture when I think of Abba is I think of that intimate, like crawling up in His lap relationship. Well, that's a little different than this. So it's a little hard to kind of align those two positions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Go ahead, Carol.
Well, it sort of is a continuation there, but fearing God is respecting Him and His awesomeness, His reverence, enough to say, I'm not going to speak. I'm going to change this. I'm going to change this. This is like, so that fear is that you don't want to lose the respect or you don't want to not do because He is the God of heaven and He is so powerful. You want to do what makes Him happy. You don't want to make Him sad. So that fear is not a fear that He's going to reach out and just punish you for the first time, which a lot of people think is God sitting up there waiting to say, gotcha. And that's it. You're on the outs, and He's not that way.
It means a lot when you read this kind of statement that Paul makes about civil government to early Christians who had to fear a chaotic Roman Empire. I mean, if the emperor decided, oh, you're too ugly to live, he'd just cut your head off. Or if he decided that he wanted you for his own, he just took you and made you a slave. So for them to understand this kind of thing, it's a comparison between the Roman Empire and God's rule. And I have a great deal of respect for God's rule. I have no respect for the Roman Empire. I fear them. You know, I would run and hide if a Roman soldier happened to come down my street. But that's not hiding out of respect. It's hiding because I'm afraid of him. Because he is so chaotic. I can't depend on him. But I can always depend on God. And you know, this idea of transcendence that we began with, I think that's so important. God is way more than just a superhuman. He is beyond anything that I can imagine, any characteristic that I want to talk about. God is the embodiment of that characteristic. He's not just the one who loves the most. And I hate it when I start thinking about the sacrifice that Jesus made and I compare it to the sacrifice that I could make. There is no comparison. He is transcendent. He is above anything that I can imagine. And yeah, I look at that and I say, well, maybe for a good man, some would dare to die. I might die to protect my family. But that doesn't even touch the hem of the garment when we're talking about God. So I think there's a sense in which we recognize his transcendence and the only response to that is awe. That's it. Yeah.
I think that he is so much grander when you think about the universe and how far out he can think and how time is his own and that we're the fabric. As humans, we just can't imagine being able to worship. How can we worship him? Are we prostrate on the ground? Are we singing? What are we doing? I mean, but he is going to transcend our spirit so yeah. that we will be able to do that. And I think it probably worries us all a little, like, well, am I really showing him enough reverence? I mean, you know, and if I don't do it here, how can I do it there? And it can make you doubt yourself. But I think the change is so terrific, so much greater than what we can imagine, that we will be comfortable there because God will make us comfortable.
Yeah. You know, Kim and I went to the Russian Orthodox Church in Iqaluit when we lived in Alaska. And it's really interesting, when you go into a Russian Orthodox church, there are no chairs. And I commented on that. I was talking to the priest. He said, how could anybody come into the presence of God and sit down as if you were having a conversation with your equal? So there are no chairs. They would be taken aback if they saw all the pews in our building. And they would say, you would never do that to the Queen. I remember watching I think it was The Crown, wasn't it? And Winston Churchill was counseling the next prime minister. And he said, when you're called in to see the Queen, and they went to see the Queen once, I think it was once a week or something like that. He said, you never turn your back on the Queen, and you never sit unless the Queen asks you to sit. You never touch her. And I remember when, I don't remember which one of the first ladies it was that went to see the Queen of England and just did what we normally do, reached out and grabbed her hand and held her hand when she said hello. And it was such a breach that you did that. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about reverence and awe, and understand that fear is a word that's used often in biblical information to describe this relationship that we have with God. Knowing God depends upon our knowledge of his holiness and the reverence that is produced by that knowledge. It's not a reverence because of fear. I remember when I was in college the first time, I was kind of a rabble-rouser. I was really a rabble-rouser. And Richard Nixon came to the campus at the University of Redlands and delivered an address. And I was going to ask, I knew that the students would have an opportunity to ask questions. And I was going to ask him some blistering questions about why he was doing what he was doing in the conduct of the war in Vietnam. And when it was my turn to ask a question, because I was talking to the president, a man that I loathed in terms of his policies, I couldn't open my mouth. I think it's understanding that his position is not like my position at all. So who was I to ask that scathing question? And so I think about this statement Knowing God depends on a knowledge of his holiness and the reverence that is produced by that knowledge. So let's look at the way that God's people are described, and then we'll look at the way that ungodly people are described. And by looking at the comparison, I think it'll help us. So let's read these passages. Let's first read the descriptions of godly people. We'll start with Genesis 22:12. Lee, can you read that for us?
No,
and then
I'm not going to be able to read that.
Oh, okay. Carol, can you read that one for us? And then Diane, if you can read Job 1 at verse 1. And then we'll just keep going around the room. Okay. Acts 9 at verse 31, then Acts 10 at verse 2, Acts 10 at verse 22, Acts 13 at verse 16, and Acts 13 at verse 26. So let's just start, and we'll just keep going around the room. And remember, you have to speak up so everybody can hear you.
Okay. I'm going to start at verse 11. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Do not stretch your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me.
Okay. We're familiar with the setting there. So, okay. Diane?
There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil.
Okay.
At 9:31. So the church throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria all had peace and was built up and walking in the fear of the Lord. And in the comfort of the Holy Spirit, it was moving.
Okay. Eileen?
Okay. Acts 10:2. We have it just about. Let's see.
Acts 10 and verse 2.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Good for you. Can I just start at number one? Because I don't know what's wrong with me. There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian regiment, devout man and one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people and prayed to God always.
And now just remember, this is before he was baptized. Before he became a Christian, he's still a God-fearing individual. Okay? Let's see.
Vicky.
Vicky, see? I told you it's going to be back about you.
Thanks, Tim. The men replied, We have come from Cornelius the centurion. He is a righteous and God-fearing man who is respected by all the Jewish people. A holy angel told him to ask you to come to his house so that he can hear what you have to say.
Okay. Ted, 13 at verse 16.
Men of Israel, and ye that fear God, hearken. The God of this people Israel chose our fathers and exalted the people when they sojourned in the land of Egypt, and with a high arm he led them forth out of it.
Okay, Mandy, and verse 26.
Brethren, children of the stock of Abraham, and those among you that fear God, to us is the word of this salvation sent forth.
Okay. So this is the description of godly people. They fear God. Now let's look at the ungodly people, and we'll start in the back. Dean, can you do Psalms 36 at verse 1, and then we'll just keep coming up this way.
And I'm glad you said it, because I can't read that for better. Glasses are doing me no good. Psalms 36, verse 1?
Yes.
An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes.
Okay. Lenny or Andrew. I skipped over Andrew. Andrew, can you do Deuteronomy 25 and verse 18?
How he met you along the way, attacked among you all the stragglers at your rear when you were faint and weary, and he did not fear God.
Okay. Lenny, Ecclesiastes 8:13.
But it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like a shadow, because he does not fear God.
Okay. And Faye, Jeremiah 2 at verse 19.
Your own wickedness will correct you, and your apostasies will reprove you. Know therefore and see that it is evil and bitter for you to forsake the Lord your God. And the dread of me is not in you, declares the Lord God of hosts.
Okay. So what can we say about the comparison?
There are people who fear God and there are people who do not.
Okay. Okay. And you can, yeah, go ahead, Carol.
Oh, I was just going to say that in the first ones, the fear of God was because they were doing what he asked them to do. And in the other one, it says that you will, he will reprove you, and that says that they're not doing what he says. So.
Okay, that's really interesting. I find that an intriguing concept, that it's easy to understand why people who are not doing what they ought to do, okay, murderers, thieves, drunkards, women abusers, there are all kinds of people that he describes in Romans 1, and it's easy to understand why those people ought to be afraid of God. Because they're facing an ultimate punishment. There's no question that they're facing a punishment. So I can understand why they are afraid of God. Just like I understand my reaction when I saw blue, blue, blue in my rearview mirror because I had set my speed control on 90. Okay? And I wasn't in Montana, where there was no speed limit. I just drove like a madman. So it's easy to understand why they should fear God. But godly people fear God.
Yeah.
And I guess what that tells me is godly people are not afraid of punishment. They're doing what they should be doing. They're living the way that God designed them to live. But they still have a fear of God. And what that tells me is fear is not the same as being afraid. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Eileen.
Isn't it act of respect and awe and love and wanting to do what God wants you to do? I mean, he's everything.
Sure. It's a healthy respect. Yeah, Faith.
So I read a verse in Jeremiah, and he's talking to wicked people. And he said, the dread of me is not in you. There's another word.
That's a good word, dread. Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of when you talk about how teenagers think that their parents don't know anything I hear. And then all of a sudden when they get 30 or 40, all of a sudden they're going, well, how come you're so wise? How come I didn't know you were so smart? It's the in-between is that change of mind where you're going, oh, yeah, he said if I didn't get tickets, I'd have lower insurance and I could afford to do this and I could afford to, and all of a sudden it it dawns on you that if you do what somebody said was right, it's what you're supposed to be doing to live correctly.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Mark Twain that said he was amazed at how much his father had learned between his 18th and 30th birthdays. Or maybe it wasn't Mark Twain. It may have been somebody else. But that's the point that you're making. Yeah. I was surprised that my dad got so smart. Because I was pretty smart. Or thought I was pretty smart. Other thoughts on this comparison? I really like that.
There's also another one when you're you've got a fear or a respect for something. If somebody cranks up a chainsaw, they better have a fear of what the chainsaw can do and what it can do. I had a neighbor of mine who was going up clearing off this lot and whatever and dropping all these trees and bringing home all this wood. Came home one day where he dropped the truck on the back bed and the tree on the back of the truck. He lost his respect.
Yeah.
He had his truck too close.
Yeah. So there is a sense in which Christians fear God, but it's respect rather than being afraid of God. Yeah, Lenny, or Faye.
The respect that we probably have is he is the source of life. I mean, where did life come from? Where's the, what makes the seed grow? What makes the eggs turn into chickens? And he created us, the source of life. So if he's the source, he's also the annihilator. In a way.
Yeah. And recognizing that causes great thankfulness. And you just want to be close to that kind of person. We tend to withdraw from people we fear. And we're in terms of being afraid of them. Okay. But we are not afraid of God. Perfect love casts out fear is the way that Paul says it. It's understanding everything that God does for us. Okay. So let's look at the way fear is used in some passages. And we'll call it good for tonight. We'll go further on this discussion next week. But let's look at, Ruth, can you read Leviticus 19 at verse 3? And Frank, can you read 1 Peter 3 at verse 2? And Kim, Ephesians 6, 5. And I will read Isaiah 11. Okay, go ahead, Ruth.
Every one of you shall reverence his mother and his father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God.
Okay. Frank?
I'm trying.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. First Peter, what?
Chapter 3, verse 2.
Yeah. 3, verse 2. It says, that ye may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandment of us that absolve the Lord and Savior. Was that what you wanted?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kim? Ephesians 6.
Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear, and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ.
Okay. And in Isaiah 11, this will be our last one. The Spirit of the Lord will rest upon him. Of course, he's talking about Jesus. Okay. The Spirit of the Lord will rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and the fear of the Lord. So, what do you see there? The way that fear is used in these passages.
I can see that it doesn't mean afraid.
I'm sorry?
I can see that it does not mean afraid.
Okay. Anything else?
The one I read about slaves and masters, I think that it means to have a respectful knowledge of the relationship. That it's an unequal relationship. You have a respectful knowledge of that. I still struggle with, and it's my own personal struggle, and I'm sure that lots of people have probably reconciled this, and I work on it all the time, is how do you bow before the throne and then crawl up on the throne at the same time and accept the throne as your own, because he places us on the throne. He lavishes his grace and mercy on us, and he calls us his children, which in that Jewish culture, it refers to almost as an equal, in a sense, if you're his child. And so he elevates us to that. And at the same time, I need to reverence and bow down before him because of his majesty. So it's just something that I struggle with all the time. Because I like I said earlier, he's invited me to have that intimate relationship with him, but he's also invited me to fear him and to respect and reverence and awe him. You mentioned the series The Crown, and I enjoyed watching that. And one of the things is even the queen's children had to respect her position as queen, and they would bow to her when they would come to greet her when they were older, obviously not little children, but when they were older, because they understood that unequal power. And I think that we have to understand that God is transcendent. He's so far beyond anything we can even imagine. Yet he wants to have an intimate relationship with us. That just speaks to his glorious giving nature, that he has granted us such grace and mercy, and he wants us in his presence. It's not that we're a nuisance. It's not that, oh, here she goes again, asking for this or for that, or he doesn't tolerate me. He cherishes me. He loves me. He wants me in his presence. That to me is just, it's so far beyond my understanding. I appreciate it so much because I want to be a God-fearing person, and I want to appreciate it in my life, but it's still almost incomprehensible in some ways.
Yeah, in the passage that I read, if there's anybody in the world who has ever existed, who had no reason to be afraid of God, it was Jesus.
That's not the same word.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll continue to talk a little bit more about the fear of the Lord next week, but I did want to firmly establish the idea that the fear of the Lord is awe and respect.